another episode of the actually we're going to switch we're switching it up now. We're officially the I Love COVA show, which still stands for Coastal Virginia, because there are just too many daggone cool places to spotlight. So today I'm here with Chris. I was informed beforehand that it's not just Go Less Than, it's Less Than. Go Less Than, I think, was it just the Instagram channel? Was the
exactly okay. Our social media handle, website.
Cool. So yeah, like I always say, it's like we're here to tell your story. You know, how did we get here? And feel free to go back as far as you want. So let's maybe start, like, you know, what did you do before this? You had mentioned like Costco.
Worked at Costco for a long while, especially in my early college days. Mm-hmm. But outside of Costco, I've been in business in some form or another over the years. And it's kind of a circle back to Ghent, but I used to own the store next door.
Okay. You say college. Where'd you go to school?
Old Dominion.
Okay. Old Dirty.
Nice. Old Dirty.
Yeah. What was your degree there?
Psychology.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. When did you finish up school at ODU?
07.
All right.
Aging myself.
That's all right. And you finished up psychology there and then immediately went to work for Costco, or how did that work?
Yeah, no. So I worked at Costco before, right outside of during high school and early college. And then I started a clothing label, and we did what's considered slow fashion now. I guess fast fashion wasn't really talked about 10 years ago, but
yeah.
So we sewed garments and stuff in-house, mm-hmm. and worked with other private labels around the country that were hand-making things that weren't just mass-produced. Mm-hmm. And so that was called Adamas, and that was next door about 15 years ago.
Dang.
Yeah.
All right. Well, cool. And how long has this place been open now?
I opened this location in Ghent 7 months ago.
Okay.
And then
opened. But Less Than's been open for longer than that.
So Less Than started as a website.
Okay.
Earlier in the year. The intention was to have the website and a mobile shop.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had this custom camper and was building it out to do pop-ups.
Yeah.
And, farmers markets. And then COVID happened.
Mm-hmm.
So the site was live and we were getting ready to roll out the mobile shop. But once the restrictions came down, there was no more gatherings.
Sure.
So I had to pivot and move to a storefront sooner than
Let's
expected.
Go still a little bit further, like on back on like the burgeoning of the idea. So what, what kind of spurred the thought of what you have here? Was there some pivotal moment in your life where you're like, there's got to be a better solution?
Last year, I learned the term zero waste.
Okay.
And for me, it was just kind of how I lived.
Mm-hmm.
Zero waste is a premise of producing the least amount of waste as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that looked like recycling things that I purchased, mm-hmm. only purchasing what I need, trying to buy things that were well made so it could last a long time.
Yeah.
Shopping secondhand. Yeah, if I'm buying ties, I'll go to the thrift store.
Mm-hmm.
Even the chairs we're sitting on are vintage. A lot of my furnitures are from, mid-century.
Yeah.
And so I learned of this term, zero waste, and I was like, well, I'm kind of doing that. And I feel like, to a large extent, a lot of us are doing that and we're just not aware of it. And I looked at my lifestyle and how I spend my money and how I align my spending with my views.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that it didn't really match up, going online to order things, paying for shipping and joining subscription models and being tied into these ecosystems and then receiving boxes inside of boxes and plastic packaging and bubble wraps. And it just didn't match up.
Mm.
And so I thought that I could create a website where we can package better and really make a difference in terms of helping people get the things that they need without all the extra.
Yeah. Are there, if you were to kind of give a little spiel on things that maybe common things people have misconceptions about or misunderstandings about either recycling or, maybe think people are doing things that aren't really that effective. Could you go into that a little bit?
Yeah. So, one of the misconceptions of recycling is if you just throw it in the bin, it's good to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's double-sided. So, on one hand, you do want to put what you can in the bin and, hope that it gets sorted. But the reality is, only certain plastics are recycled, and it depends on where you live. It depends on the recycling plant. And then the prep work that you put into it has to be there. So if you send something to recycling that's filthy, it's mm-hmm. not going to go in. If you send something to recycling that has the labels on it still, or mm-hmm. you know, the plastic cap around the top, really? Or the rings
okay.
around that hold the bottle together and things like that.
Is that because the maybe the machinery that sorts? Okay.
Exactly. So when they receive things that are dirty, it would contaminate what they're trying to do. Okay. And so those things get set aside and it just doesn't get recycled. And then it's really a lot of manpower to sit there and clean everything that comes in, remove labels, remove the glue that holds the labels, remove the little ring caps and all those things. And so it just doesn't get done.
Yeah.
So for me, the idea is to try to live a life where you're less reliant on throwing things away and less reliant on recycling. And that's,
I think of so like in my business, I'm always looking at what's the most frictionless thing that I can create. So I'm making something easy, because the human nature just comes down to, like, if you tend to be like water, you choose the easiest path.
Right.
If you have to think about it or act about it, like there's a book I was reading about changing habits. And one of his main things is like change your environment to make the action that you want easier. So if it's like, well, if you don't have ice cream in the house, it's easier not to eat ice cream. So a big one for like working out is like set all of your clothes out, get everything set up so that in the morning, you like make it easy for you to do it. Because if you have to wake up and think, oh, I got to find this and this in the dark, and I don't want to wake my wife up doing that, it gives you another excuse not to do it. And so I'm thinking of that through like recycling. Like if you remove the whole step of even placing it,
exactly,
then you get rid of that step altogether.
Exactly.
That's interesting.
And that's kind of the gap that Less Than fills. So people that come here, they might purchase a mason jar, and then that would be the jar that they would use forever moving forward. And
sure.
if that jar should happen to break, glass is infinitely recyclable, so
yeah.
it doesn't deteriorate over time during the recycling process. So
and it's a
commitment.
Cheap.
Exactly. So yeah. it's a commitment that will last forever. And you've really just avoided plastic for, you know, mm-hmm. for the duration of that.
Rachel sneezing in the middle of the interview. Gosh.
I thought I was going to be first.
That's not as cool. That's interesting. Well, and mason jars are in now, you know, the whole like refined farmhouse type look.
Yeah.
So, you know, that would work. Do you have mason jars here? That
we do. Yeah, we carry mason jars, but we also have a community jar section where the people in the community have donated jars to us.
Okay.
We sanitize it, so we just try to make it so that the cost isn't a barrier. Uh-huh. So you don't have to invest in a mason jar or amber glass bottle. You can just come in and grab something that's been sanitized and get started.
Cool.
Whether you're using it directly or you're using it as a vessel that you keep under your sink to mm-hmm. refill the things that you have on the top of your
yeah.
sink. It just
is there. My guess is that there would probably be a misconception that it's more expensive. Is that the case? Not the case?
Yeah. So, in some regards, the items that are here are more expensive, and in a lot of regards, they're less expensive. It's always going to be cheaper to construct something in a laboratory
mm-hmm.
and use plastic.
Okay.
And so, when you're working with products that come out of the ground, there's a lot of effort behind that, a lot of skill trade behind that.
Sure.
And so it tends to be a little bit more. But for example, if you buy laundry detergent that's full of fillers and mm-hmm. things that allow it to sit in a warehouse for years until it gets to you.
Sure.
It's made with a bunch of chemicals. You know, it's going to be cheap. But if you come here and get quality laundry detergent and you're using a lot less of it because it's not full of fillers, it starts to average out, especially when you're able to bring your container back
sure.
and refill that, or just get the quantity that you want. You don't have to get 64 ounces.
Yeah.
You don't need 64 ounces.
Yeah. I think of, in construction, so my degree at ODU was civil engineering technology with construction management. And I got really into, like trying to understand like green building methods. That was actually one of the classes that I took. And, I got really into like timber framing and like stone houses, because I was like, you know, kind of the similar mindset of when you build something, like if it lasts a really long time, well then, you know, some houses in the United States that are built poorly will only last 75, 100 years. Mm-hmm. And then you've got these timber frames, stone houses, or even stick the stick belt, which is like regular framing, that, you know, have lasted almost 300 years. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that, like, this idea of first cost or initial cost versus lifetime costs. So slate roof is a good example of this. You can, depending on where you are and where you get the slate roof is like three times as expensive to install, mm-hmm. but the right slate lasts 200 years. Whereas a cheap three tab asphalt roof it's based on the oil industry. But it's wicked cheap to do it. And right. It ends up that you have to replace it three or four times in the lifetime that you would do for slate or some other type of, you know, maybe potentially natural material.
Right.
I would imagine there's probably a similar thing here that, like, some of it is like, you have to decide when you're going to pay the cost. Are you going to pay it now or are you going to pay it later?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And in this space, it kind of, that connects to your health as well. What mm-hmm. do you want for yourself? So mm-hmm. you have the cost of the goods, but what is the unseen cost? Yeah. What's happening when you're
familiar with Michael Pollan?
No.
He writes about food.
Okay.
And he has this very similar concept. You'd probably really like him. He says it about the quality of food, basically. He says the cost comes from somewhere. So it's either the quality of the food, maybe it's the laborer, right? Paying really cheap labor somewhere else and maybe taking advantage of that. Maybe the cost is the soil and you end up depleting the soil. Maybe the cost is the nutrition, right? But there's a cost somewhere in the line.
Exactly.
The easiest one to forget is the one that you don't see.
Right.
So anyway, it made me think of that.
Yeah. And I agree with that completely. Yeah. You know, so it's what do you want for yourself? What do you want for your family? And what are you willing? And I always tell people that have hesitation about making swaps because of the financial costs, like, you know, at the end of the day, you have to do what makes sense for yourself and for your family and sure. for your budget. And so you're not shamed if you have to go and get something that's wrapped in plastic. There's yeah. no shame there. I mean, we're here doing our part to help offset what's happening around yeah. the world.
So. We all have to make choices, you know, especially if you're a young, poor college student. You've only got so much of a budget, right? And it's kind of like, well, do I go home for the holidays, which cost me $800 to do all of that? And, you know, buy presents, or do I buy organic this year?
Right.
And I think it's like you're 100% right there that there's a constant evaluation of where I'm going to prioritize. You know, there's a quote that says, like, show me a man's calendar and his bank statement, and I'll show you his priorities.
Right.
And I think I think the best use is to put yourself under scrutiny. Right. Because it's really easy to point fingers. But right. when you'd like to look at yourself, you're like, all right, where am I putting my time? Where am I putting my money?
Exactly.
I think the same thing also kind of sometimes when it comes to, like, it's easy to get frustrated with certain elections or things that happen. But the biggest vote that you make every single day is with your dollar.
Exactly.
Every single day. Mm-hmm. Makes a huge impact. Mm-hmm. A huge impact. The other day we were looking at buying. I was so frustrated because I was trying to buy this board game. And I, like, called every comic book store within, like, I think we called a total of like seven. And none of them had it. And I was like, I don't want to order it online. This is so frustrating. But it's one of those things where I was trying to make a conscious choice of, like, right. can I keep my dollars local? And I think a lot of people do that. So and I get it. You know, convenience is easy. Amazon is easy. It's boom, it's going to be here in 2 days. And sometimes it's quicker.
Right. Yeah. I think another misconception is that to align yourself with the concepts of zero waste, that it actually costs money. I mean, you can be zero waste for free. Mm. You know, the idea is to use what you have until you can no longer use it anymore. So if you're getting food to go through a drive-through, tell them no plastic utensils and just eat it when you get home and use your metal, you know, spoons and forks and knives at home.
Yeah.
And that saves the straws from entering into the environment, the mm-hmm. wrapper for the straws, mm-hmm. the plastic bag, the spoon, you know, the fork, the knives and stuff. If you have some sort of reusable bag, take that to the grocery store with you
yeah.
instead of picking up a new plastic bag every time you go there, you mm-hmm. know, using what you have, making things at home, you mm-hmm. know, we have a lot of people that come in here and DIY their own toothpaste, their own deodorant, and you mm-hmm. know, and these are things that are just found around the home. And so that's, you know, it you can be zero waste at wherever you're at. in life. You don't necessarily have to come to less than and purchase everything here in sure. order to make a difference.
Cool. One of the things I always like to ask is like unique challenges. So in the creation of this, you know, part of it is creating a vision or trying to produce something in the world that you want to see. And there are always challenges that come with that. And so I'm always interested in kind of a little bit of the entrepreneurial part as well. Mm-hmm. You know, what are some things that you've come up against and you're like, how the hell do I solve this? Or that's really frustrating. That put a big kink in things.
Right. Yeah, so I would say COVID related was understanding how to implement curbside pickup and local delivery with being just a small company. I mean, these other companies that are out here, they're leveraging DoorDash and these other companies that, you know, Amazon and, you know, these other third parties, Uber, you know, these kind of apps that allow people to just get in their car and become part of a company.
Sure.
I don't have that, you know? And so, you know, how does that work? How do I implement that on a website level so that when people place an order, they can see where they can pick up their goods or they can put in their address. So, and it's sitting down with the people that are in that space, you know, sitting on with the web developer and saying, how do I go from here to there? Mm. And then going through the motions in the store. So that was one of the main obstacles. I didn't foresee having to do curbside pickup and local deliveries as a thing when I was contemplating this build out. Another thing is, how to get my ideas executed.
Sure.
Because, you know, I didn't have, a plan wasn't given to me on how to do this. You know, this is the first one in the Hampton Roads. And so I had to kind of learn my way through it. And so
did you have a model for something in the US that you were like, we're trying to figure, like, has it been done before? And you're like, how do I do what they're doing?
Yeah. So I actually first saw it in Canada.
Okay.
There are some zero waste stores throughout the country, but I actually visited my first one in Canada on a trip. But, you know, so for example, we receive products in bulk and we try to work with the people that we work with to make that process as sustainable as possible. And so what we've accomplished now is that when we get a 5-gallon box of liquid goods in it, we're able to use that, fill our containers, and then take that same box, put a label on it, and send it back.
Mm-hmm.
And they sanitize it and reuse it. And so we create a loop system where we're no longer relying on introducing new packaging.
Mm.
We're no longer introducing new containers unless something happens to it in transport. And we've created this loop closed system where we're not relying on trash or recycling in order to execute the mission. And so those are things that, you know, require sitting down and hammering out and seeing what that looks like and then also making it affordable at the, you know, at the consumer level.
Mm-hmm. Future moving forward, where do you want to see this go? How big do you want it? Do you want to expand in different areas, markets, products? You know, what do you want to see it do?
Yeah, I do. So for 2021, we're looking to bring in more retail goods to build out that side of the business.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking to get everything that we have in store online and so that it's easier for people that are maybe further away to access these goods. And we'd like to bring the concept to other markets. And so we're looking at the peninsula and further up in the Richmond area.
Is that franchising or is that... What does that look like?
Yeah, I've been approached by someone in the franchising industry. I don't believe that I'm there yet, and I don't know that that's going to be the move that I'm going to want to take.
Sure.
And so
it's a tough call.
Yeah. So maybe something might happen in the future where I have enough systems in place where I feel like I can do that and it be effectively my baby still, you know, for every franchise owner, but. I don't know that I'm there yet.
Yeah.
So at this point, it's owner operated.
Have you picked up or read the E-Myth Revisited?
I'm sorry?
E-Myth Revisited?
No.
All right, I'm going to send you that book.
Okay.
This is a good one. It talks a lot about this idea of, and I've talked about this before on the podcast, of you usually have in a business three people. You have a tradesman, a manager, and an entrepreneur. The best way to kind of conceptualize it is, say, like a plumber. you know, he's working underneath another plumber. He says, screw this dude, I'm going to go do my own thing. And then he starts his own gig, and then he realizes really quickly, like, holy shit, I got to order things, command manage things, get timing, you know, keep stock, do taxes, go. And now I got to go also get clients and figure out who, you know, what kind of project I am or am not going to do. Like, there's just a lot more to it than just showing up and, you know, doing the actual physical trade of plumbing. And so he goes through, the premise of the book is like, hey, you know, out of small businesses, like 25 that start, 5 years later, only five are alive, and five more years later, only one or two are alive.
Right.
So what is it that those companies do that make them survive for the long term? He uses McDonald's as an example, which is basically the opposite of the store. But it's still this idea that one of the reasons you can basically have like a 25-year-old buy a McDonald's franchise and it works is because they have every system and process dialed down to the exactly. dime.
Yeah.
And so he kind of goes through this idea of like how to think about your business in those capacities. And it would apply to any business of like, all right, how do I create repeatable things? How do I get over and over and over again? And so like I guess my encouragement to you would be that like a franchise may not be a bad option, because it's like, if I can get the systems and processes really dialed down, I can produce a shit ton of good by having 40 of these stores across Virginia versus going, I don't like the franchise model. I don't know, just a thought.
Yeah, yeah, no, I completely agree. It boils down to having the systems in place. And, mm-hmm. You know, I'm still figuring out things as I go along, so I'm just not there yet.
You said more products. What would that look like?
Yeah, so the goal for this year is to make it so that when people come in the store, they can find more ways to make swaps in their homes. And so we want to make sure that we are recognized as a place where you can make a lifestyle change versus just buying soap. I think there's a big misconception that a zero waste store is a soap store.
Mm-hmm.
While we do have soaps, we have a lot more to offer. And and it's really interesting to see people come into the space and, you know, start on one side of the store and work their way to the other and say, wow, I didn't know that this even existed, or I didn't know that this was available, or I didn't know that there was an alternative to a single use item, or there, you know, that this could come packaged in something different. And so,
sure.
or this could come packaged free, you know? And so, we want to continue to create those experiences for guests that come in.
Yeah. Very cool. Anything I didn't ask you, I should have asked you.
I think that's the gist of it. I mean, the refill station, I think, is something that's really new for a lot of people in the area, unless they've traveled outside of the area or unless they follow this kind of concept online. But the refill station is essentially, you're able to come in and get what you want by the ounce. You can bring your own container, even if it's plastic. The idea is to use it until you can no longer use it, or you can get a container from us. And that way you're buying product instead of packaging. And that's the gist of the refill station.
If you could go back 5 years and give yourself advice, what would that look like?
Not to make some investments in tech that I made.
Well, what about in particular to the store?
To the store?
Yeah. Or entrepreneurism or, yeah.
You know, I'm happy with... Yeah. It's difficult for me to go back and say, you know, because you play that game and you're playing that game at 2 a.m., you know?
Yeah.
And so the only thing I look back at is, what did I succeed at? What did I break even at? And what did I fail at? Mm-hmm. And I feel like I maybe would not even be here if I hadn't failed in some other ventures or some other interests. Mm-hmm. And so it's really hard for me to change how things have unfolded for myself. And so
I think that's, especially when it comes to entrepreneurism, I was just having a conversation with a young man last night that came over to the house, and we were talking about like next steps for him. And, he's 24. I was trying to encourage him. I was like, dude, go fall on your face on something. Like, go fail. Like, if you don't have kids, you don't have a wife, you don't have a girlfriend, you have graduated, you've started this job. Like, if there's any other time in life to go like fall flat on your face, now's the time. And I think entrepreneurism tends to have this thing is like you go and you have some experience and then it's not until like 10 years later, like, oh, that really influenced me.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, let's say you went and worked for a plumber. Like there's something about the knowledge of working with your hands that can be applicable to something else. Absolutely. Even if it's just an appreciation for the guy that eventually comes and fix your toilet. And you're like, thank God he exists.
Right. Learning how to quote a job. I mean, mm-hmm. I agree 100% with that. I mean, if you have less restrictions on yourself, you don't have a partner, you don't have kids, you should be working on your business. You should be working two jobs. You should be, you know, getting all that you can get. And I mean, when you get, as you move up in your entrepreneurial experiences, there's some people that won't even invest unless you've had real world experiences, you failed. I know when I look at proposals and stuff, I'm not interested if they haven't been around enough or that person hasn't done enough prior to, you know, meeting me.
I think I was watching, I think it was Shark Tank. I can't remember if it was Damon John or Kevin O'Leary was saying that they don't like investing in anyone that hasn't failed a few times first.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like you don't have enough experience to even know what you don't know. I want to see, like, tell me about like the three things that you did and then fell on your face before you were successful.
Right.
So I think it's just this fear of failure, this fear of like, what is everyone gonna, I don't know if you follow Gary Vee at all, but
I've seen
He's a big, he's like, dude, who's the only person that's really that you should be paying attention to that's judging you is you. And even you are probably being too hard on yourself.
Absolutely.
So I just think I'm a huge advocate of like, go try.
Absolutely. And it's the process of failing where you really benefit. It's not so much that you're going to zero or you're going negatives or you can't return an investment that was made. It's when things get tight, you get scrappy and you start getting resourceful. You start learning, you know,
credit and you've got kids in a certain school district and you've got friends in a neighborhood and it's like, oh, well, if I fail but when you're young, it's like, okay, you fuck up your credit. And, guess what? You can go and fix it in a few years, right? You're going to be fine. Credit's not everything. You take the guys from Shark Tank, this idea of like, I screwed up my credit. My credit now is shitty, but you know, I have this idea of grinding. They're going to look at the idea. A lot of commercial real estate or large scale real estate is never done on the individual's credit score. It can be done initially, but it's mostly like, does the deal make sense?
Right.
And they want to know the person is like, do you understand how this works? They don't care about your credit. Right. They want to see capacity.
Right.
Credit is, and that's another just as a small, it's like, it's just a reflection of your ability to handle other people's money.
Exactly.
And guess what? Like if you're going to be in the entrepreneurial world, that may mean that you borrow some money that you can't pay back because you're fall on your face.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the end of the world. Yeah. So I get really encouraged by things like that.
I do too. I think one of the other barriers for entrepreneurs is wanting to have everything solved before they actually take that step forward. And it's not possible. You can't go from a concept to where McDonald's is right now. You can't go from a concept to where I am right now and have everything sorted out.
Mm-hmm.
I've been here 7 months. I'm two locations and a website, mobile shop, but I'm still figuring out things as I go along. So it's just not possible to have all the pieces.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people, the more certainty that you need on a daily basis, the more likely it is that you probably are going to get paid a certain paycheck. Like even within business, it's like, well, I'm only going to do this if I know this is going to be the outcome. It's like, well, good luck, because you're going to have to try a whole bunch of stuff that may or may not work. And you have to be kind of, you know, calculative on the risk reward kind of, you can't constantly be throwing everything out there and then not being able to pay the
bill. Right. But running up a tab.
Yep. Yeah. That's interesting, man. Cool. Any final words for the people at home?
Check us out on Instagram at Go Less Than. We're on Facebook at Go Less Than. Same thing for our website, Go Less Than.
Mm-hmm. So cool.
And we're here to help.
You're located here on South Cali,
Right next to Chipotle. Yep. Cali and Shirley Avenue, and our Virginia Beach location's on Holland Road.
Sweet. Well, thanks, Chris. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thanks for coming in.
Yep.